on Human Services to order. And today we're having a public hearing. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 5031. And we have Department of Human Services, Department-wide Support Services, Fair Boris. I'm hoping I don't pronounce your last name.
Yes.
Paksuresh. It's a Swede trying to pronounce it. Is it Pakistani, Afghani?
Persian.
Oh, that's even worse. Jeez. Okay. Well, it's not Larson or Olson, so welcome. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. For the record, Fair Boris Paksuresh, Chief Administrative Officer, Department of Human Services. This afternoon, we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday and finish our administrative services presentation with a presentation on information services. And before I turn it over to Rick Howard, I just wanted to say a few words about technology, which has become very expensive but also very crucial part of managing and running modern organizations. Now, our tendency within our organization, I assume this is not too different in other organizations, is to look for technology solutions fairly quickly in response to process issues that we have. And at the end, when things don't work out, we often blame IT for failing us. And that is the challenge that our interim chief information officer, Rick Howard, faces. In fact, if you look at the tenure and longevity of chief information officers in public and private organizations, they're not very long. And that is one reason. So really, collaboration between information technology and the business part of the programs has become a very crucial and important factor. And I know, Representative Kotek, you had asked some questions about information technology investments. Mm-hmm. So our intent today is to cover the POPs that we have, and I just wanted to direct your attention to there are several details around this, the three POPs that Rick will be talking about, and they are in the book. And as we get to them, the Healthy Kids POP, the detail of it is under the OIS presentation, page 95 in the book. And then there are more detail in the agenda, page 10. And we can point out those places as we get to them. And I also wanted to point out that at least on two of these projects, the information technology dollars are a very insignificant part of the total project budget. So these are really just the technology pieces of these larger projects. So with that, I will turn it over to Rick Howard, our interim chief information officer.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Rick Howard. I am the interim chief information officer for the Department of Human Services. I'm here today to present a brief overview of the strategic role of information technology related to three policy option packages and two major projects that are currently underway in the Department of Human Services, the Medicaid Management Information System Replacement Project and the State Automated Child Welfare Information System Project, referred to as MMIS and SACWIS, respectively. This goes without saying, but I'd like to begin today by assuring the subcommittee that although the subject matter concerns the application of technology, its people, our workforce, the program managers, DHS staff who we support, and the clients who those programs serve, who are really at the center of everything we do in the Office of Information Services. Technology, for technology's sake, isn't what we're about. I say this because sometimes it doesn't always appear that way to the end user, and so we can never be reminded enough. But I do keep informed of emerging trends and opportunities so that the Office of Information Services can deliver proven technology solutions in support of health and human services. Ultimately, as one leading technology consultant reminds us, it's the responsibility of information technology executives to ensure that IT is contributing to business results by creating an organization that has the right skills, resources, and processes to meet the business's needs. Five activities described in the next few slides I'll be discussing today have some shared attributes, and they speak to the strategic role of information technology at DHS. They are quite simple: more online services for the staff and the people we serve, more data sharing among different information systems, data sharing in a secure and confidential environment, offering an integrated view of our clients and the programs that they're in, and more information that is timely, accurate, and actionable. Those are really the three critical components of information. It's recent, it's timely, it's accurate, you don't need to second guess it, and you can do something with it. It's actionable. Too often, it's really accurate, but it's so old, it doesn't matter. Often you get it really quickly, and it's worthless. It's not very accurate. And sometimes it's the wrong information. It doesn't help you solve the problem that you're presented with. In describing each of these efforts, I'll talk quickly about the past, what problem we're trying to solve with the technology component of these policy option packages in these two projects, what the present, where we are today with that, and what we're hoping to gain from deploying the technology in support of these programs. So I'll direct your attention to slide 72. This is the Health Kids policy option package. Where are we today? Well, I won't talk to the larger legislation. Where are we today on the technology side of that legislation? At the present, the Department of Human Services doesn't have online services for enrollment or for eligibility or any kind of any way of automating a process that's largely paper-dominated. Other states do. One component of the Healthy Kids plan will help us get an online application process in place so that, in a streamlined manner, those who are eligible for that program can use web technologies to enroll in that program.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Heard the word application and online and just have a question, because the current application that I looked at, I believe, has something like 49 pages.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, this is designed to be a two-page application.
A two-page application. Are you going to test having that filled out by the users, and probably even test maybe having some of the legislators actually fill it out? Because I'm serious. Because often things that we send out and ask the public to do, we ourselves are challenged to actually filling it out. So I want to, know if you will, not only the user group, but actually maybe even let some of the members of this panel see if what it takes to fill out an application.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, I'm not an expert in this area. I believe that the application itself will be tested by users. It will be the supporting documentation that may present a challenge, and that's something that we would need to consider as we move forward on this.
I guess then I see the follow-up. I see the good administrator, Mr. Goldberg, out there. Mr. Goldberg, my request is that, because I think if there's anything that actually inhibits access, and I'm not only addressing the department, but that the one area that hinders access to services, whether we're talking about human services or other agencies, is the forms that we require people to fill out. And if they're challenging, people will just immediately turn away and say, I can't do it. So I'm just asking for Mr. Goldberg.
Chair Boone and Senator Winters, members of the committee, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services. Let me respond to that in two ways. Number one, I absolutely share your desire to move to a system that's simple, that's accessible to everybody. In that regard, we have designed a two-page application and are in the process of making plans for piloting that
with our clients. I missed a meeting about that the other day. I was over here. I will get you and the committee an update as to where that pilot is and when, and get you a copy of the two-page application, and we'll include you in our pilot. But I think the longer-term vision is not just the two-page application. It's really what Rick is referring to, is this isn't just about healthy kids. And this isn't just about Medicaid. This is about our TANF program. This is about food stamps. This is about all of our programs. And it's about the fact that for many of these programs, although there are some different federal and state criteria, we need to create a single interface that allows people to do this seamlessly. I was in Florida several months ago looking at a system that they've developed where they have one single online application for food stamps, Medicaid, and TANF. And we've been looking at that and working on some things that we can do in order to have this not just be about Medicaid. That's what we need to do. And the experience in Florida in terms of online has been very interesting, in that the initial thoughts were that many clients wouldn't have access to computers or couldn't fill them out, and what they've actually found is 85% of people fill them out. It's been opportunities to have people do this in their own homes with the help of family members at local libraries, and the fact that many of our clients have a whole lot better things to do than to sit in field offices, and this really creates greater efficiency, greater access for clients, and something we need to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would encourage you to be expeditious, and I agree with you that it is more than healthy kids, that throughout our system we need to be as simplistic as possible, and at the same time making certain that we capture the data and that we're in compliance. So I'm awake.
Before you go, Dr. Goldberg, I do have a quick question since you're on the subject. You know, there are other state agencies have kiosks, and in their agency headquarters, too, and regionally, they have computer terminals and things like that. Is that something that's is possible to set this up as well, even though it would be on site in the building? But just so that there could be, you know.
Chair Boone, members of the committee, that's, I think, part of the larger vision. In what I saw in Florida was the technology to do that, to the extent of not just having kiosks in buildings, but the ability to move to a totally paperless system. And not only do you have kiosks to sign on in buildings, but you have the ability for people to, rather than sitting and waiting to submit documents to caseworkers, to be able to just walk into a building, scan them into their own record, and or fax them in electronically and create it as an electronic record. So I think we're open to and starting to talk about all of those.
Yeah,
and Rick can probably give you more details than I can.
I certainly can.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator
Forrest. Dr. Goldberg, didn't Florida try something like that with their election machines at one time?
We're in the human services business, not the election.
They perfected their technology.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to be sure.
Okay, we'll go ahead, Rick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. at any rate, that the larger vision as described by Dr. Goldberg is this is our first step into that area. And certainly we're aware of other states' experiences in this area where online portals for multiple services and using a simplified application workflow and digital technologies do take out a lot of the cumbersome and multiple steps that our clients currently do experience. So we're hopeful that as this legislation moves forward, that we will be making a step into to, the world of the late 90s.
Open like a tree.
Moving on to directing you to slide 73. We're talking about some of the costs that are associated with this bill, and as Faribault pointed out earlier, we're really in the area of leveraging a lot of the current technologies we have for imaging and digital imaging. There's a service also being provided by the Department of Administrative Services called eForms, and we believe that there's applicability to be able to keep these technology costs relatively low. They are proven, and to build the infrastructure to support this bill, we do not believe to be much of a barrier in terms of the technology component. Moving on to slide 74, the Oregon State Hospital Data System Project. This is a component of the larger master plan to build a hospital management system, and I should say rather transfer a hospital management system onto the campus of the Oregon State Hospital and its satellite facilities so that we can really upgrade systems that have been in place since the 70s and the early 80s. If we continue to serve the folks who are at the state hospital, there are really considerable risks in terms of licensing. It had been called out by the Joint Commission on Accreditation and Healthcare Organizations that many of the issues, the safety issues they find, are related to technology or the lack of it in terms of patient care. We believe that by bringing in a new and modern hospital management system, we can really improve in the areas of uniform treatment, medication, reconciliation, admissions, transfers. The basic components of running a modern hospital will be present in the data system that has been brought on. As Mr. Scherzinger mentioned earlier, and we've, I think, alluded to it a couple of times, you just don't bring in a make a big change in your business environment with a data system without really understanding the implications in terms of the staff's ability to use that system. So the idea here is to do the level of change management that would be required so that when the system is brought in, the staff are prepared as much as they can possibly be to maximize the, well, let's say to minimize the disruption that a new system would bring with it. And so a component of the plan in 0709 is to begin the change management process as the requirements for this new system are being developed. Before I move on from the data system for the hospital management system, any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the hospital data system, what roll-up for 0911 are you anticipating?
In terms of the deployment of the system itself in 0911? Sorry.
Because if I recall, this is
yes,
this is part of the facility COP package.
That's correct.
We want to access that money now to get started on this, so I'm assuming there's more past this.
There is. Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, in 0911 would be the point where we would be purchasing the software and the hardware, training and implementing the staff. We would have the software online. We would begin by rolling out to the Oregon State Hospital itself, the Blue Mountain Recovery Center in Pendleton, acute care hospitals that are part of the network, eventually the Junction City facility, and then ultimately fully realized the community centers and service providers, which share many of these patients as they come in and out of the community. So it is a larger network, but that is the plan beginning in 2009-11. It will be a staged process.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. And that actually makes me feel a little better, because this goes back to the conversation from the other day, understanding the operational processes before you go out and buy something. So essentially the 3.2 is planning dollars, getting figure out what we need before we go out and purchase it.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, that's exactly right. Planning is, it cannot be emphasized enough when you're into these kind of projects. By nature, information technology projects are risky, and the methodologies we bring to the process in the development life cycle are designed to minimize that risk as much as possible.
Thank you.
Moving on to the unified eligibility policy option package on slide 75. Again, it's a very similar story. Old data systems from the 70s and the 80s, very inflexible. They have limited functions, and they don't meet the expanded self-sufficiency requirements in the areas of eligibility, determination, reporting, planning, utilization, and case management. The purpose of this policy option package is to begin, again, the planning. We know that we have a problem. We don't know exactly what the best solution to that problem is. And that should, while the policy option package itself calls for the replacing of the aging food stamp and client maintenance data systems, that may be a long-term goal. I don't know that we have the time, given the level of need, for these two data systems to provide online services and an integrated view of the clients who are, in many cases, in both the Medicaid program, the PANOP program, the food stamp program. The ultimate replacement of those systems is a certainty, but when we might do that, we believe that there are bridging methodologies that we can apply, other states have, to provide a more integrated view in bridging these two data systems. So this policy option package gives us the ability to begin to do the kind of analysis work that we would do in terms of discovering the high-level business and functional requirements we need, the technical requirements, building the business case, whether you go for a complete replacement of the systems or some method that would permit us to have those systems begin talking to each other and presenting integrated views of the data, bringing some of the business logic up to what would be called the presentation layer. We'll issue a request for information from major vendors in this area and submit, and then we'll begin to develop and look at the alternatives available to us. We are always looking for the low-cost, low-risk, quickly deployed solution, and we believe that other states have addressed these problems quite effectively, and we'd like to learn from them, and where we can bring transfer technologies as an alternative, we would look to do that.
Thank you. It might be helpful to make sure that we get reports back in the interim about some of this. I don't know when the appropriate time would be for that. In February might be too soon, but middle of next year sometime, I would think, particularly on this issue, because whether or not it's a huge issue, and the question is whether we go forward and how we go forward. I'm guessing you'll have some sense of that in a year.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, we will provide interim reports as we do on all major IT projects.
Great, thank you.
On slide 76, or 77, we are here talking about the current status of the Medicaid Management Information System project. A few facts about the MMIS system. We pay $3.1 billion per year through that data system to over 31,000 Medicaid providers in the state on behalf of services rendered to over 400,000 Oregonians. It's a big system. The purpose of this project is to replace our current MMIS, one that's technically state-of-the-art and functionally superior. to the system that we have today, and so that it will meet the business requirements that are always evolving, as well as federal regulations in the area of HIPAA, Health Information Portability and Accountability Act. The current MMIS is no longer available to efficiently and effectively process 1.7 million claims, encounters, and capitation payments we receive every month. The MMIS project is the MMIS is currently slated to be implemented, scheduled in 2008, and we're on track for building a system that will, in mid-2008, that will provide various capabilities that we currently don't have in terms of web-based billing. Our providers will be able to submit their claims online, take a look at what happened to that claim, if there's an error in that claim that they can they can fix, rather than the current cycle of discovering the error, kicking it back out, mailing it back to a provider. They can fix it online and resubmit the claim. Prior authorizations and provider enrollment, again, will be available online. The whole effect here of our modern MMIS will help us in terms of reporting, workflow improvement, and the more efficient administration of the Medicaid program. The final slide I'm speaking to today, 78, is about the State Automated Child Welfare Information System. We, again, have multiple systems which we attempt to administer our child welfare programs through in various smaller applications. It's a very fragmented approach. We were found back in 1990, there were 87 assessment review guide requirements for a child welfare system, and we met 20 of them. With 28% that would be considered compliant with federal approval, with federally approved approach to a statewide automated child welfare information system. That really led us to say we've got to get this fixed, and we are in the process of doing so. We set out our...
I'll ask you before you go on about your system operations and maintenance staff. You're contracting it out...
With respect, Madam Chair, with respect to the MMIS system, we are contracting out the operations and maintenance portion of the Medicaid Management Information System. Yes. Okay. With respect to SACWIS, we had a recent landmark milestone met in that we posted on April 5th the request for proposals for the SACWIS system. We believe that by, if we stay on track, by October 18th, we've had some high interest in the vendor community for these systems. By October 18th, we will notice an intent to award that for that contract, and by January 2008, we will begin working on the SACWIS system with an expected phased rollout to begin for implementation in December 2009. We've given the proposers an option of taking a phased approach as they have done in other implementations. We believe that's a low-risk approach.
With the MMIS system, we have been moving forward, going back, moving forward, going back. I think what we did in 99 and 2001 and 2003 based on our revenue picture. And what's your sense of when we will have it completed to where we're not constantly running? And maybe I should ask our LFO staff this question, because each session, just when we think that we are moving forward, when something occurs and we're moving backwards again, because of revenue issues. And so are we going to ever get this particular project completed?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, I'll take a stab at that, and then the agency can jump in. Actually, on the MMIS system, it will be completed this biennium. to the extent that the original project was expected to be completed, since there have been some add-ons during the process at the Fed's request, and so that has delayed the full implementation, if you want to call it that. But this is a project that really, because of the high level of federal funds involved with it, it hasn't been subject as much as some other places in the agency to the budget shortfalls that we have had. So funding has been continuing on this project, the work has been continuing, and it's at a point where very soon it will indeed be operative, and I guess we will be able to call it a success at that point.
And there's a lot of new things happening today on the floor. We had one of the budgets, I was carrying it, and it was the rebalance budget. And a lively discussion, but it shows me that the changes being made are being successful. And although some people are a little nervous about them, I thought it was a good discussion, and the bill sailed through. So congratulations.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I just wanted to add, maybe I should ask Rick briefly if you can explain just the business case process for IT projects and Representative Kotek. This goes back to your question around the strategic direction and planning for IT projects, because I think it's a good process, and I just want Rick to talk about that for just a few moments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assuming Representative Kotek, since this was a question of the other day. Yes, in the world I work in, it's called demand management, and it comes to the point of there's an opportunity that's presented or believed to be presented, and it's often easy to jump straight to a solution, say, I know how to fix this, and go out and do so and have it blow up in your face. And in the world of IT, that's particularly true. The process we adhere to in the Department of Human Services really attempts to take a more balanced and reasonable view of justifying the opportunity relative to its risks, its costs, its benefits, the business need you're trying to resolve, and whether, in fact, technology is even the thing that you need to apply to solve the business problem. To that end, we do look at the opportunities that are presented by the business, working with them, and begin to take them through a very specific process of describing the problem, the nature of the problem, what alternatives are available, what are the expected benefits to be achieved, what would be the cost of deploying a solution, and again, it comes back down to the alternatives. There's often many different ways to go about solving these problems, and doing some high-level requirements right off the bat, doing some research to see what others have discovered in this area. It's nice to think that we're just innovative, and everybody in the country is looking to Oregon for some of the answers. In some cases they are, but I think in many areas with respect to technology we have a lot to learn and are learning from other places, so we often go to those sources and building the business case, and ultimately present back to a governing body within the Department of Human Services, the Information Technology Governing Council, to present the business case and look for approval before we move further along on it. It's a very transparent process, subject to much revision and interaction with the business, who really owns that business case, but with the assistance of the technology folks.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to share one example with the committee around the smart IT investment, fairly simple technology, and what I'm talking about is video conferencing. Given that we have 9,500 employees in 155 different locations, quite often it takes time and money to travel, to a location for meetings, and that's time that's taken away from direct interaction with clients. So what we did is we invested in 41 systems, video conferencing systems, and this is just data over a 5-month period from November of 2006 through March of this year. And during that time, we managed to keep over 1,000 vehicles off the road by conducting meetings via video conferencing, saved about 304,000 miles of travel, And about 11,000 gallons of fuel by doing that. And at the same time, we freed up about 6,600 staff hours that would not have to be spent traveling. And again, this time could be spent working in the office or spending that time with clients. And I think that's a great example of using technology effectively and smartly.
Makes sense.
Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to clarify something. I have to say this on the record. While other parts of the country may not be looking to Oregon for its technology advantage with respect to health and human services, I would like to say that the staff who are maintaining those systems work miracles every day. I've seen it myself. Their ingenuity, their ability to take something that really has well exceeded its life cycle as originally designed and make it do more, often at the request of the legislature, is astonishing. So I do think we can export a spirit of innovation and the ability to get another mile out of something that should have stopped running a long time ago. To that degree, I have great confidence in the staff who are serving the department in the technology field, and I know that when we bring them the opportunities to learn something new, like online application technologies, they're going to rise to that challenge and astonish our clients and ultimately all of us, make us proud.
That's really good to hear. We feel the same way about our staff here in the building. They're all 12-year-olds, but, you know, I'm kidding. They're listening, I know. No, it's an innovation in IT is great. I truly believe it's an art as well as a science. So. Any questions?
I just wanted to add, Madam Chair, we had a presentation in Human Services and Women's Wellness about the whole IT issue and how policy changes affect the budget and things like that. And we are making a lot out of some very, very old systems. And I like to think we're benefiting from all the states who had resources to start on some of these things, and we can just look at their mistakes so we don't have to repeat them. So in some ways, it's not so bad. We're a little behind some other states.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, that's called proven technologies. I like to see it working. And know what the experience was and where were the pitfalls. In this area, it's not so bad to be a little bit behind.
It's good to be congratulated in any case, and you're very modest about it. I'm glad you said something.
I'm glad that the staff is doing a yeoman job, but on the other hand, I do like Oregon being the pioneer and leading the way, and I'm also mindful of that this illustrious body have a lot to do with whether or not we actually become those pioneers in technology. And I have to put that on record because the agency can only implement, if you will, when we talk about those investments that they ask us for, if we provide them with the necessary resources with which to get the job done. And so and I know we've been talking these issues about new technologies and advancements since I returned to this building in 1999, and so this is now 2007. And certainly it's well that we can borrow from other states as to what they are doing, but I still would like for us to think about ourselves as we develop the budgets, the needs of our staff, and the new technology. So I need to put that on record because we forget, I think, sometimes of all these mandates that we actually pass across this floor that have a lot to do with the expansion of your various systems without thought of whether or not we have provided you with the resources with which to implement them.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
I very much appreciate Senator Winner's comments, and I think that there are times in this process where it's very difficult for us to keep a perspective because we want to put more money into delivering services to people that actually need them. But I think that the work that the agency's done in the administrative area, and particularly the work that is going to help streamline the administrative processes, and the technology is a huge piece of that, but that actually is, after that initial investment, going to allow us to put more money into actually providing services and provide those services in a much more efficient way and get way better feedback about whether they're effective or what we can do to help make them more effective. And so I know that this is going to be another session where there's going to be a lot of discussion around providing services that people to people that need them, and those are compelling arguments. But I really do hope that we don't lose sight of the impact that we can have long term by making some of these investments in systems improvements. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, thank you for providing a segue to close this ASB presentation. And I don't see Dr. Goldberg here, so I will just do a quick wrap-up of the ASB presentation. As you mentioned, Representative Morgan, it is a tough job to be providing administrative support in a human services organization. And as I mentioned in the beginning of this presentation, we are keenly aware that any money that is wasted in the administrative area could be easily spent on serving the clients, and that is what we intend to do. Hopefully through this lean process that we have talked about several times over the past several days, we will become pioneers in this state around providing efficiencies and channeling the savings that we can achieve in administrative services in an administrative part of the department to the program areas. And I just want to take a moment and acknowledge, Rick talked a moment ago about our staff, and I do want to talk about the quality of our administrators who are managing these very complex programs and have a very tough job. And you got to meet a few of them over the past few days. You met Sue Nelson, who is the Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Tricia Baxter from Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery, and Louise Meltenbring from HR, and today Rick Howard. All of these folks could be working anywhere they want, but they're here because they are committed to public service, and we have all of our other administrators are also as fully committed. Senator Gordley asked the other day, what can you do to help? Well, I think in many ways you are helping, but one thing that really means a lot to us is engaging in dialogue and having a conversation on even playing field. When Representative Morgan came over and participated on the operations review team, it really provided a different environment where we were sitting around the same table trying to solve the same problems. It wasn't the legislature agency relationship to where we are always holding our heads down and not trying to make eye contacts. Seriously, you know, this, and I think I told you that when you came over last time. And we know you're busy, but those kinds of interactions communicate to us the degree to which you care. And at the same time, we know that you're holding us accountable. So, you know, as we move along this path, we will try to do our best job, and feel free to ask any questions. Or, you know, as Representative Kotek requested, we will come back and provide reports on our activities and how we are spending the money and whether or not we are being the best stewards of public funds as we can be. So with that, we'll wrap up the Administrative Services presentation. Any final questions that you have, I'd be more than glad to answer.
Well, I would like to thank you again, and everybody who works with you. It's really easy for us to just see the three letters, and that's the agency. But it's nice to have faces and know that people are making, I think, a sacrifice to work for the state in some ways. But it's exciting to me to have this new lean program going forward, because it's, I mean, you're taking this behemoth agency and putting it into the stratosphere. And I'm very impressed, and I want you to know I've been working on your name all the time I'm here. So next time you come before me, I'll be able to say it quickly.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, and I'm sorry that I didn't get my hand up quickly enough when you were asking for final questions. I just have a comment I'd like to make.
You can have whatever you want.
Thank you. In the past, I remember hearing phrases like reinventing government. More recently, we see reports on continuous improvement all the time from all sorts of agencies and offices. And what we've been hearing about over the last few days is sort of a nonstop reporting of continuous improvement and reinventing government. For some people, it might sound like a whole lot of bureaucracy or something, but hearing about the organizational and technology system design issues that you're trying to tackle is very impressive. It's interesting to me, and it's very impressive that you're doing this. There was a comment either yesterday or the day before, actually there's been more than one comment, about how money saved by doing one thing would be available for something else. Sometimes I think we look for savings to reduce the cost of something, but we're really not talking about being able to reduce a budget significantly when we have so many unmet needs. It seems like there's in every area that we've been hearing about over the last 4 months now, there is a tremendous unmet need, and what we're talking about is being able to make some headway in serving more people who are in critical need of help, and that's what I've heard you talk about also, that every dollar saved is a dollar that goes directly to serving people, and this is the human services area, and so that's good to hear.
Madam Chair, Representative Nathanson, thank you for those comments. I just want to mention that in sharing the Lean project with other agencies, with BAM, with the LFO, what we hear is we are listening, we are watching, we are very excited, but we are skeptical because this could be just another one of those projects of reinventing government. So our challenge becomes to demonstrate that this is not just another flavor of the day. And if I may add another comment, I've worked for the state government for 17 years, and I've seen windows of opportunities that open, and they remain open for a particular period of time, and if we can take advantage of that, great things can happen. And if they close, we have missed the great opportunity. Today in DHS, I think we have that window of opportunity, and frankly, the quality of people that we have, starting with the director, and you saw Jim Scherzinger here, and frankly, I was privileged to be sitting next to him making this presentation, because you don't come across people like Jim every day, and for him to be here and wanting to do this job while he doesn't have to be here is a huge window of opportunity for us. So if there was any time that we could do something positive in this organization that's long-lasting, this is it. So, we'll try to take advantage of that to the best of our ability.
Thank you. I'd like to just add one other closure to what's being said. And I hope we give them the time to actually carry out the window of opportunity, because I'm very mindful that so often the agency does have things in play to make things better, and that you do have a staff that is well qualified, but yet if they don't move fast enough sometimes for the liking of this body over here, we kind of change or we take the winds out of their sails. And so I would just kind of implore the legislative body to give them the opportunity and the time to actually implement some of the concepts and the ideas that they have brought forth to us, and recognizing that the agency was established in 1971 and has been developing, evolving up to 2001. And some of the things that are in place, you can't change them overnight. And if you look at all of their external impacts, implications to this agency, it has more external factors than any agency in the state of not only the state of Oregon, the state of Washington. I think that education pales in comparison to the Department of Human Services. When you look at both its funding streams, you look at the regulations, and you look at the mere fact that they have an array of human dynamics inside of that agency. And I just implore us to have some patience and understanding as they go forth, because I think sometimes we don't.
Thank you, Senator. We will be the patient legislature. And I know you're listening up there. I'm just trying. I have to make a call for senators because we need a quorum coming up.
Okay.
And so you can decide who among you is going to come, but there will be a test. So I want to see the senators back down here who can be here. Thank you.
I think you should call them by name.
We'll be nice to Representative Morgan.
I want to also add my voice to those that are asking for the agency to get the room to kick this reorganization plan in place. And I came at this as an extreme skeptic. And I remember when we were told that the agency had a shortfall, and it was, I think, a couple of years ago now that we got that news in the legislature. And there were a number of us that just went, here we go again. We've been down this road so many times with so many different directors, and we had really, I think, very little trust and a huge amount of skepticism about where this dialogue was going to end up. And when we came into the special session to appropriate money to the agency to be able to finish out the biennium, there was a lot of discussion around putting together a work plan with the agency that involves some of the money staying within the purview of the emergency board and kind of holding it out pending events on this work plan actually coming into being. And we were, frankly, I think, in a place where we were trying to protect ourselves from just throwing money away. And it was, I think, extremely refreshing to be in an environment where the agency came forward and said they were very much in favor of doing that. They wanted a work plan, they wanted to be held accountable, and they wanted to make it work. And so here we are now, I think, in a relationship, a working relationship between the legislature and the agency that is infinitely more transparent than it was 2 years ago, with administrators that are freely asking us to come over and welcoming us when we show up and giving us all the information that we ask for, even though it costs all kinds of staff time and problems, and I'm sure it makes you crazy. But I think that what's been set in motion here is genuine, it is a genuine restructuring of the agency, and there's been a big shift in the attitude of the administrators of the agency. And I think it is for not just in terms of the relationship with the legislature, which has improved a huge amount, but also in terms of wanting to do the best job that you can do to deliver the services that vulnerable Oregonians need. And I just want to salute you and hope that in this process we give you the funding, which you won't be able to make this happen without the amount of funding that you need, and give you the time that you need to make everything happen, hold you accountable to the plan, and see this actually come into being. Because what I have had experience with is an agency that has strangled inside of its own processes. And there are incredible well-meaning people that work in DHS, and there are people that truly care about the quality of the life in the state. And so to be able to put a system in place that's going to aid that it's a really valuable investment for us to make.
Well, and I remember where I was in my car with Dr. Goldberg telling me what he was planning to do, and this has by far surpassed that in my estimation of what it would end up looking like. So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Guys, are great. Scott Bates,
we're ready, Senator Gordon.
The senators are here.
I know. Well, we have something when, again, it's the time, but any questions?
Well, Madam Chair, I would just like to apologize for my absence. I was at the other end of the hallway and hearing Room A testifying on House Bill 2530, which was tied to revenue reform. Thank you, Madam Chair.
No, I was tired. Getting 329 is some final fixing 329.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are two more things on the agenda for today. The first was to be the agency-wide wrap-up because this is the final presentation as such of the Department of Human Services budget. That's not to say we're done with it. Next week, you will get a discussion of the reshoot, the repricing of the governor's budget. But part of the presentation, according to the presentation guidelines, was to have the agency talk about their program priority list and their reduction options. But Dr. Goldberg had a conflict and so can't be here this afternoon for this. So the agency has the materials. I would suggest that they hand those out then, and that when next we come back to this budget, if you have questions on those, there can be a discussion of that. And then the other item on the agenda is a work session on the federal grant application request, and then we could move into that.
So I'm going to close the work session or the public hearing on House Bill 5031, and I will open a work session on Department of Human Services federal grant application request. And we have Ryan Delbert, Victor Fox from Public Health Division, HIV, STD, TB program. Welcome. Anytime you're ready.
All right, thank you very much.
Introduce yourself for the record, too.
Chair Boone and members of the subcommittee, I am Victor Fox, the HIV Care and Treatment Program Manager with the Division of Public Health within the Department of Human Services. And I'm here today to request permission to allow DHS to apply for Federal Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS grant. I'd like to provide just some general background and some information to describe the objectives related to this proposed grant application, and then my public health division colleague and I will be pleased to answer any questions or provide you with further information that you might request at the end of this brief overview. The Oregon Department of Human Services Public Health Division requests approval to apply for housing opportunities for persons with AIDS, otherwise known as HOPWA, grant for federal funds up to $1.43 million over a three-year period of time. The funding is available through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the notice of funding availability was for the 2007 year was received on March 14th with an application deadline of May 31st of 2007. If permission is granted, DHS intends to apply on the 24th of May 2007. Through close collaboration with the Oregon Housing and Community Services, DHS has since 2002 administered and provided direct housing services to low-income Oregonians living with HIV and AIDS in the state through an umbrella program that we refer to as Oregon Housing Opportunities in Partnership, or OHOP. The objectives of the grant, as it is proposed, is a special project of national significance, or SPINS grant, okay, and is targeting chronically homeless individuals or people who are marginally housed and at risk for becoming homeless, and again, with HIV and AIDS being the fundamental underlying condition. The grant that we are proposing will also look at the co-occurring condition of mental health. Okay, serving people with HIV/AIDS and who have co-occurring mental health conditions. The grant will be used to provide approximately 60 households throughout the state with tenant-based rental assistance, which is a scattered site model, which means that there are individual sites located in the communities where these individuals live, and have integrated community health, community-based mental health services and addiction services. They also will have HIV medical case management, which is a part of our HIV care and treatment program, and other supportive housing services available to them. The proposed services will decrease the risk of these individuals of homelessness and increase client housing stability and engagement and retention in HIV medical care, and also will be providing behavioral health services, including substance abuse treatment and mental health care. DHS will provide direct services to the clients living outside of the five-county area of the Portland metropolitan area, and we will partner with a community-based organization, Cascade AIDS Project, within the five counties of the Portland metropolitan area. And then additionally, we will partner with Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, who is a mental health provider, they will be providing those mental health services across the whole service area of this grant. If awarded, the grant would be renewable on a three-year cycle, so it is not something that would be one-time only funding. And DHS has been recognized by HUD nationally as a model for HOPPA grants, and so we have a very good reputation with HUD. This grant would actually further the overall goals of our program and of DHS in providing housing stability and providing medical access, medical care, and to mental health and addiction services. And we will avoid duplication of services by closely collaborating with other DHS and community partners. Okay. So my public health colleague and I are please answer any questions that you have or further information that you may request on this, and we thank you for the opportunity of seeking permission to apply for this grant.
Thank you. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to make sure you're only going to use the grant money in five Oregon counties?
No. DHS will be the direct service provider for the counties outside of the five counties in Multnomah County surrounding Portland. Cascade AIDS Project will be the provider in those five counties that constitute the metropolitan area.
So all 46 counties or every area of the state will have an opportunity to participate in this program.
Actually, if you can give me a
minute. Madam Chair and Representative Gerard, my name is Ryan Dibert. I'm the program coordinator for the Oregon Housing Opportunities and Partnership Program. Please to answer your question, Representative Gerard. The services that we're proposing to provide through this grant would be focused on those counties that comprise the five-county Portland metropolitan area, as well as those counties that physically touch Interstate 5. Those counties house 93% of the people living with HIV in the state of Oregon. So we're focusing our services primarily there. That's not to say that similar services are not going to be available to those people living with HIV who may require those services in other counties. Those clients would receive the same services through our existing HOPWA-funded services, our existing Ryan White case management programs, and through our community mental health partners in those areas.
Follow again. But what you're saying, that other 7% will not have the same opportunity as the 93% in regards to these grant availability of funds.
Madam Chair and Representative Gerard, they would not have direct access to the services that will be funded through this specific grant. However, very similar services will be available to them through other grant funds.
Thank you. Is this grant an enhancement to the housing, to the program that the Housing and Community Development have? Because I remember we actually approved some funding for housing and community that dealt with AIDS and AIDS services. So is this an enhancement to that particular effort?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, yes, this is an ongoing, as Mr. Fox stated, the Oregon Housing Opportunities and Partnership Program, part of the In Partnership is the strong link between the Department of Human Services and Oregon Housing and Community Services. We do continue to partner with them in implementing this grant. VHS will provide the direct services, but by partnering with Oregon Housing and Community Services, we're able to make sure that clients have ongoing access to the housing services that are available through that agency as well.
What's the life of the current grant that you have under Housing and Community Development for your particular program?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, we actually have several different grants that were providing HOPWA-funded housing services under. One of those grants is an annual grant that is a formula-funded grant, so we receive an annual allocation. That's the most direct partnership with Oregon Housing and Community Services. They're the direct grantee, and we're the service provider under that. We additionally have two other competitive grants, one that will be ending in June of 2008, and another that is renewable for additional three-year cycles when it ends in 2009.
So as I look at sustainability issues, you know, we're looking at some long term.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We received Mr. Moore's analysis of the existing grants, and so I have a question about the competitive grant, because that's the one that's going away. That's the one that's serving the 31 other counties. It looks like we will get dollars through the formula grant process. Will that keep us at the same level for those 31 counties? I'm just curious how that's going to work out number-wise.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, the grants are definitely shifting right now to some degree. If we are able to successfully apply for this grant as well as maintain our formula grants, and the additional SPINS grant that we currently have that's renewable for three-year cycles, we would maintain a client capacity that's very similar to what we have today, even with that competitive grant going away, to cover all of those, all of the counties throughout Oregon.
Thank you, Ms. Follow-up. It looks like we're serving 62 households in those 31 counties, and granted it's a smaller population, but I know sometimes it's difficult when you go to a formula funding. The money shrinks, so I'm glad to hear that. Hopefully we can keep it whole, even if that grant goes away.
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, yeah, that's part of why we are applying for this grant at this time.
Okay.
And with that, Senator Westland, I will take a motion.
Madam Magnifique.
He's working on his French.
My motion-making motivation merely mirrors my mentor's astounding capabilities. So I would humbly request that Representative Nathanson make this motion, if you're prepared.
Voila.
How's that for alliteration?
Can I just do it without a screen?
Sure.
Yes.
All right.
I'm moving that we allow permission for the department to apply for Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS federal grant.
Representative Nathanson has moved that we allow the department to apply for the grant.
And recommend this to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
And recommend it to full Ways and Means with a due pass. Objections?
Comment.
Open
discussion.
I'd like to protest
the fact that rural Oregon's getting left out of this, basically, and that there are needs in rural Oregon just as real as there are in these five counties. But I will support the bill for those 93% of the people that do need the help and will get the help. Okay?
That's a friendly protest.
Thank you. And I just want to thank the representative for keeping that population in mind. It is smaller, but it is, they need services. I think what the department is trying to do is as whenever you're chasing federal grants, is try to be innovative to make sure everyone can get covered. But I'm hoping that they make sure that that's an issue for many of us on the panel. So.
Thank you, Representative.
And I appreciate, Gerard, your comments, too. Okay. I'm sorry, Senator Bridges.
Thank you very much. I would just like to acknowledge the partnership that exists in this grant application with Cascade AIDS Project and Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, and with the Housing Department and PHS and Mental Health Division. That's a great collaboration. And what this grant opportunity gives us is just a small patch, and what is needed is a larger quilt of services for this population, the HIV AIDS population, but also the mental health population, which is addressed through the grant. So it's great that we have the opportunity. We're just reclaiming our taxpayer dollars and putting them to work for a population that is sorely in need. And I also appreciate very much that Representative Gerard made the comments that he did, because the quilt that we're trying to put together needs to be reflective of the needs of all of our communities in Oregon. Thank you.
And Senator Westphal.
Madam Chair.
Or Madam Magnifique. How am I doing? Do I get dinner on Monday night or what?
You are doing well, but just remember, only French.
We only have 8 minutes.
I want to respond to Representative Gerard's very legitimate and appropriate comment with regard to geographic distribution. And it's, you know, it's pretty simple. I mean, if you're sick in Milton or Paisley or Portland, you're still sick. But I want to compliment the department for focus, if you will. I mean, the tendency here, particularly in the political process, is sometimes it's just also easy to thin the soup where there's really no meaningful good or application being applied to the ground or the efficacy of what you're trying to accomplish. So while I wish this grant was much more, I mean, it's, you know, $1.4 million and you're getting functionally 60 beds out of the deal. Oh, that's pretty good. And so I want to compliment the department and at the same time keep looking for every one of these federal dollars, because as we go forward in this state, as Senator Gordley alluded to, I mean, Oregon is a donor state when it comes to our health care dollars. And that, you know, we are merely trying to get back to even in terms of dollars we taxpayers pay to the feds and get back in terms of health care. So please keep looking, and thank you for your good work.
Thank you.
Administrative assistant, please.
I just have to make
a correction.
My good colleague, Senator Weston, said as it relates to health care, it's not just health care. We are a... we're below the line. And how much is returned back to Oregon versus how much we pay into the federal coffers. So I just need to put that out there so that people don't misunderstand that it's just health care that we're not getting our fair share, but it's all the other categories.
Okay. We're ready to vote. Gary?
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
Aye.
So be it.
I would have voted yes if he was here.
If there's anything for the good of the order?
He can probably hear it. Absolutely.
He's down to Jared. Thank you.
Thank you.
They're twins.
They're well.
Thank you, too.
Thank you for your comments.